Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Tom Weber on NPR News.
Nuclear powers understand their responsibilities. Kim Jong-un shows no such understanding. His abusive use of missiles and his nuclear threats show that he is begging for war. War is never something the United States wants. We don't want it now. But our country's patience is not unlimited.
That is the UN Ambassador Nikki Haley speaking to the Security Council yesterday after this weekend's nuclear test by North Korea. It was the country's most powerful test to date. It was not a missile test, as we've seen in recent weeks. This was a bomb detonated within the country's borders as a test. The sixth time North Korea has done that, and this one caused the equivalent of a 6.3 magnitude earthquake. If talking is not the answer, as President Trump has said in some tweets, then what is? And what is the threat? We have two guests now to discuss this. Sun-Yung Lee is a professor of Korean studies at Tufts University. Good morning, and thanks for joining me. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
And Sherry Gray is here in studio, a lecturer at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota. Sherry, thanks for being here.
Hi, good morning.
Your questions from what happened this weekend, the news over North Korea, what questions do you have? 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. You can tweet me at WeberTom1, and please don't call or text if you're driving. Sherry, just what do you see as the ramifications of all that happened this weekend, the tests and the response?
Well, I think the response is fairly predictable. This is not something that is new. It's not a new situation for the U.S. or for the region. I think the response is a little more bellicose, coming from the tweets that we get from the president, Nikki Haley's statements at the U.N. But really, the six-party I should explain that the U.S. is part of the six-party talks or non-talks, as we've had in a long time, are facing limited options in this area. I think there is a lot of behind the scenes trying to get Russia is suddenly the most popular person to talk to recently to try to get Russia on board with sanctions. I'm not sure that there are a lot of options. And I think the Trump administration is going to find what all presidents have found about North Korea.
And Yoon, begging for war. Are we going to war? What do we do with that statement?
I don't think North Korea is begging for war. I think it's rather imposing its will on the United States. And that statement by the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. shows more frustration on the part of the Trump administration, anger, disillusionment at having placed misguidedly its hopes on Chinese cooperation. And now that the administration is reduced to empty bluster and finger-pointing, this is all very predictable. A lot of people say North Korea is unpredictable, and I get that in a conventional sense. But North Korea is approximately predictable. It sees itself as the party wielding the carrot and stick, and the United States and its allies as the asinine creature to be tamed. The latest test came on Labor Day weekend. North Korea has conducted nuclear tests and major missile tests on American Independence Day, Memorial Day, Columbus Day, as well as its own red letter days, and even during Chinese Lunar New Year celebrations. And all this is an intent to maximize the political impact of its provocations in violation, blatant violation of numerous UN Security Council resolutions. The more coverage there is, the more reporters ask the U.S. president, what is your response?
Yeah.
The more political pressure there is to try to get North Korea out of the headlines and go back to negotiations with bigger blandishments in tow.
Do you think, Yoon, that we would, just on the side of where North Korea seems to be now, with its technology, there seems to have been this acceleration. Someone flipped a switch somewhere, and something seems to be working a lot better than it was just a few months ago in terms of having the right rockets and having successful tests. On that side of that coin, would we be here regardless, Yoon, of who's president? I mean, even if Barack Obama had had a third term, would we still be in the same situation today?
We would be. And it's all very predictable. It has been for the past quarter century. We tend to underestimate and patronize North Korea. Why? Well, the reasons are obvious. They're so bizarre. The cult of personality of the leader and the backwardness of the country. You know, we laughed at North Korea's first nuclear test because the yield on it was about 1 kiloton, which was far less the yields than the yields that we saw with the two atomic bombs dropped on Japan in 1945. And we have laughed at North Korea with each failed missile tests, but this year has been a banner year for North Korea with significant successful missile tests and a very alarming nuclear test. So the tendency to patronize North Korea, to see North Korea as a child throwing a temper tantrum, as a former Secretary of State said, the tendency to underestimate North Korea's capabilities has not really worked out in our interest.
What would you add, Sherry?
Yeah, and I'd also add, I think I agree completely with Professor Liu, and I think a couple of thoughts I have. This was also a message sent to China, and they have, in the last year and a half, stopped informing the Chinese leadership, as North Korea used to do for many years, of a planned movement like a missile test or a nuclear test. They haven't been informing China of what they're doing, and I think the last two tests that they have been done during big, important headline events for China. Mm-hmm. It didn't get a lot of press in the U.S., but in China, Xi Jinping was convening the BRICS meeting in Xiamen and was furious to have the headline ripped away, essentially, by this issue. I think North Korea is clearly saying to China, stop playing games with the UN, with the United States. You're not going to push us around. China-North Korean relations have been deteriorating in recent years. China, I think, is quite honest when it says it doesn't have much influence over North Korea. I think we can see that here. I also have the I think what we're concerned about is that North Korea's missile test used to be pretty much failures, but the missile technology is improving, and the fact that they might be able to put a warhead has attracted our attention. And I think why, as Professor Lee says, we were laughing at a lot of their tests, is some of their tests were not successful.
And there was an interesting story, I think, in the Times a few weeks ago about why maybe they're just so good all of a sudden. It has to do with the rockets and the technology that they've potentially gotten from people who were protecting the Russian arsenal in Ukraine. But Ukraine has fallen on the world that it's fallen on, and those people may have just gone over to North Korea and helped them with their technology.
Well, the reality is that North Korea is not closed off, and there are 100 countries at least that are trading with North Korea. North Koreans are working all over the world. There's a lot of in and out, much more than I think we are. Well, I think the U.S. is aware of this. But I do want to change this to perhaps another question. This is a question I'd have for Professor Lee. Does this nuclear capability really change anything in this situation in Northeast Asia? I mean, they already have 25 million people in Seoul, a few miles from the North Korean border, at their mercy.
Regardless of which bomb
they have.
They have enough bombs.
They have no second strike capability. They have a very limited first strike capability. I'm not sure that nuclear weapons change very much.
Your thoughts, Professor Lee?
In terms of North Korea's deterrence capability, I don't think so. As you say, North Korea has been able to deter its enemies, South Korea and the U.S., even with conventional weapons alone, for more than 60 years since the end of the Korean War in 1953. Deterrence has been maintained in the Korean Peninsula. There has been no war since the end of the Korean War. There's been a shaky, very much imperfect, but a real peace, de facto peace in the region since 1953. However, it does change the dynamics in that North Korea's threats, which are outrageous, become more credible to the United States. And that's been always North Korea's goal, to emerge as a credible threat to the United States, to be finally able credibly to threaten to nuke a major U.S. city and kill millions of Americans. Will they go ahead and do that? No, they are not suicidal. They're not crazy in a conventional sense. But the mere ability to do so, and through graduated escalation, step-by-step escalation, to instill that fear, that concern in the U.S. administration, brings enormous strategic advantages. The United States will now be in a dilemma. Do we honor our treaty obligation to defend South Korea and Japan, or do we pull our forces, make some concessions, and save millions of American lives at home.
Sung-Yoon Lee with us, professor of Korean studies at Tufts University. Sherry Gray here in studio, director of international programs at the U over at the Humphrey School. What questions do you have about this? 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. Yoon, how is the Trump administration addressing this in exactly the same way that the Obama administration did or would have? And how is it different?
Well, I think the importance of enforcing sanctions is there. That is, the administration is now shaking itself loose belatedly from its self-spun notion that China is on our side, that we can get China to rein North Korea in. Without an economic disincentive, the Chinese will not budge because they have very different national interests in the Korean Peninsula from those of the United States. Many people have this misperception that U.S. sanctions against North Korea have always been tough, or that even U.S. sanctions have been maxed out. There's nothing much that the U.S. can do. It's simply not true. Until the introduction, the signing into law of very tough sanctions legislation in February 2016, U.S. sanctions against North Korea were, in degree and kind, far weaker than U.S. sanctions against countries that pose no security threat to the United States, like Zimbabwe or the Central African Republic or Sudan. Now there is the awareness that we need to enforce sanctions, but sanctions enforcement, like domestic law enforcement, takes a lot of time and effort. It takes time for those efforts to bear fruit. But I think that's the direction that the administration is moving in, to try to target not only North Korea, but North Korea's partners, which are primarily Chinese.
And I think, Sherry, this is where Nikki Haley was going with her comments yesterday. She made some comments regarding the fact that the incremental way we've done it in the past should no longer be the way we do it, that we have to go full hog, basically, on some of these actions. Am I reading that correctly?
Well, I think this situation presents a new opportunity for the Trump administration, and I think they're not going to be slow to take advantage of it. This allows them to do a lot in Northeast Asia they've wanted to do for a long time. This is going to return the U.S. presence as important to the region. This allows us to increase our presence in the region, where we now have South Korea wholeheartedly on board for taking the THAAD, the Terminal Air Defense System, including the high-powered radar that China so objects to. This also allows us to put more pressure on China in economic areas that we've wanted to for a long time. I think that this allows President Moon in South Korea to show his chops as a new leader. I think Prime Minister Abe is interested in, has some new opportunities in this situation to bolster Japan's perhaps military and security role in the region. So there are a lot of opportunities that are also coming out of this situation. I think China is actually in one of the worst positions right now in terms of the six countries that are involved.
So wait, are you saying that it's opportunities that we, the U.S., at least diplomatically, have wanted to do for a long time, regardless of who's president? Or are you saying this is the Trump administration's chance to put the Trumpian viewpoint of the world into that part of the world?
Well, it would be interesting for everyone is interested to see what the Trumpian viewpoint would be. But I think if you look at this from China's perspective, they see this as all a loss for them. What they see is the United States is going to get more aggressive on sanctions, and most of that is going to be targeted at them. And their ability to control the situation is limited, and it's going to have some economic impacts on them. They're worried that Russia will take advantage of the situation, and as China is forced to comply more sanctions, Russia might increase their presence in the region, which Russia has wanted to do for a long time. They're concerned about increased militarization of both South Korea and Japan, which is not in their interest, and then the increased U.S. military presence in South Korea, which is growing in the last 2 years already, but will continue and be sanctified by this, is not good news for the Chinese leadership.
Sung-Yoon Lee from Tufts University. More on the question I just asked Sherry there as well. I mean, is this a chance for the U.S. on the State Department side and the Defense Department side to do things it's wanted to do for years? Or is this a new vision that the, I guess what you would call the Trump mindset, can enact in the peninsula?
I don't think there's really a choice. It is an opportunity, yes, but an opportunity that has arisen due to the past 25 years of failed diplomacy. And there's really no point in blaming Trump's predecessors. There's enough blame to go around for each administration and each administration in Seoul as well. But I think Nikki Haley, the ambassador to the UN, was channeling Churchill when she said yesterday that the past measures, half measures, procrastination is now over. Churchill, more than 80 years, said that the era of procrastination, soothing and baffling expedients and half measures and of delays is now coming to its close. We are entering a period of consequences. We have entered a period of consequences because of the risk. The danger of war is now bigger than ever. So, yes, Trump cannot kick the can down the road and just settle for an expedient deal as all of his predecessors have done. We remember George W. Bush, who would say, axis of evil, I loathe Kim Jong-il. We know that President Bush was not very favorably disposed toward the North Korean leadership. Yet, when North Korea escalated in a major way by conducting its first nuclear test in October 2006, what did the administration do? Basically caved, gave North Korea whatever it wanted, lifted the designation, returned to nuclear negotiations, resumed food aid, took North Korea off the list of state sponsors of terrorism, and turned a blind eye to North Korea's building a reactor, a nuclear reactor in Syria, present-day ISIS-controlled part of Syria. Why? Because it was just too much. Politically, it was a big headache. Let's get North Korea out of the headlines. That temptation is always there for any U.S. administration.
So what does it look like, Yoon? What does the next phase or the next few months of not ignoring the problem anymore look like? I mean, is it more U.S. troops on the demilitarized zone? Is it more missiles installed in South Korea? How does this play out on the ground?
Well, conventional military deterrence is important, is a key part of a comprehensive North Korea policy. So there'll be, yes, more shows of force, chest beating, and so on. And that, of course, raises the risk of miscalculation and war as well. But I think it's a necessary message that the U.S. needs to send to North Korea. Will the U.S. strike first? It's highly unlikely. Over the past 6 years, even in cases of really egregious cases of outright murder, shooting down a U.S. spy plane, killing all 31 U.S. servicemen on board, hacking to death with bludgeons, with sticks and axes, U.S. soldiers along the border. There has never been a military response for fear of escalation, for fear of war. I think that kind of self-restraint is still in place, even if North Korea were to shoot a missile over Japan again in the direction of Guam. As long as there's no loss of lives, destruction of American property, I don't think the U.S. is inclined to strike first.
So what should we do here, Sherry? And we're taking your calls and questions as well on Twitter at WeberTom1 and on the phone here, 1-800-242-2828. There's probably potentially going to be another missile test this week,
right?
Because there's a big North Korean holiday,
right,
coming up, and they usually do that, as you said. Probably will be another nuclear test. There will be more tweets. I mean, there will be more this, that, and the other thing. So as we sit here in Minnesota just watching Twitter or watching the news, how should we take this in? Should we take it in as, quote unquote, the normal course of things? I mean, is there a moment, is there a news item we need to look for that we will know that actual war is coming? How do we dissect what's coming?
I mean, that's hard to say. I think already all the powers involved have, except for China and Russia, I think, have not been as clear, but have said what they plan to do. They plan to increase sanctions on North Korea, and they plan to enforce them better. I think that's one step that you're going to see. You're going to see, as Professor Lee, increased shows of force. That's already happening. I think that we will see perhaps some movements, increased drills. Russia and China are going to call for a kind of two sides talks. They're going to try to get the North Koreans to the table to talk with the United States. They're going to try to get the United States to agree to some concessions to North Korea. I think we're going to see increased pressure. We already have Switzerland and other countries asking if they can mediate some talks. So I think that'll happen. But the reality is that there are limits to escalation. President Trump cannot put too many lines in the sand because he can't cross them. He can't enforce them. We can't go to war. It's impossible.
What would you add to that, Professor Lee? When should we start losing sleep?
when we hear that troops are being deployed toward the demilitarized zone, toward the border between the North and South, both North Korean troops and South Korean and U.S. troops, when we hear that the U.S. is withdrawing its citizens from South Korea,
oh, wow.
when we see
yeah.
that Japan is doing the same, and Japan is actually talking about it even now, those will be discernible signs of an imminent war.
It's hard, though, short of that, to watch what will be, we are going to see headlines, I think, in coming days, another missile test. We are going to probably see another bombing test somewhere within the North Korean borders, Yoon. It'll be hard to see that news alert pop up on our phones and not think the world's going to hell, but it almost sounds like you're saying it's not. It's not yet going to hell. These are blustery things that we have to get through. Am I interpreting that correct? Correct me if I'm saying that wrong.
You are, and I could be wrong, of course. But the way I see it, North Korea has a compelling, even a systemic need to continue to increase its threat capability to conduct nuclear tests, missile tests. Why? Is it because they're irrational or crazy? No, because of the internal dynamic in the Korean Peninsula, where you have two Korean states, North Korea and South Korea, each claiming to be the sole legitimate Korean state representing the entire Korean nation, the Korean people. I think in this story, in this pan-Korean contest for legitimacy, it's quite clear which is the more legitimate, attractive, successful Korean state. And that means North Korea has to live with a far more attractive Korean state across the border, a magnet to your own people. And the only way to be able to stand up to that attractive, prosperous, pleasant Korean state is to be able to bully it. And the way to do that is to get the U.S. out of there.
Sung-Yung Lee is with us from Tufts University. Sherry Gree from the U. What were you going to add, Sherry?
I was just going to add that I don't think we have too many nuclear powers involved in this situation. We have Russia, we have China, now we have North Korea as a nuclear power, we have the United States. We have too many nuclear powers involved for this to escalate beyond a bluster, a threat. It could be that troops will move. It could be that ships will float closer, missiles will be fired. If things start to look like war, if people are withdrawing their citizens, we have too many millions of people involved for the major powers to allow this to go to war.
And we're talking about North Korea with all the news over the weekend, the nuclear test. North Korea says it was a hydrogen bomb. We don't know that quite yet, although we know that it showed up as a 6.3 magnitude earthquake from whatever was detonated. And then, of course, the meeting at the Security Council yesterday. We're taking your questions as well as one at 1-800-242-2828. Matt is in Finland, Minnesota. Hi, Matt. Your question today. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. So some right-wing sort of far-right media like Breitbart or so forth have suggested that we should just go ahead and do a nuclear first strike on North Korea and get this whole thing over with. Now, I find that pretty abhorrent, but I wonder if your guests could talk about that, if that happened, what the other nuclear powers would do, and you know, why maybe that's not such a good idea.
Yoon, what would happen in that case?
I think the world would see that as the caller said, an abhorrent act. It would be indefensible. There's no just cause for that kind of nuclear attack. During the Korean War, the Truman administration and its successor, the Eisenhower administration, on numerous occasions threatened to nuke North Korea and China, but the Allies were adamantly against it. The UK and everyone else said, no, we don't want to escalate and risk World War III. I think that dynamic is still very much in place today in Washington.
So are you saying that it's impossible from a diplomatic and our moral place in the world standpoint? Or are you saying it's impossible from a military standpoint that it would actually work?
It probably wouldn't work because you can't bomb all of North Korea into oblivion. We know of some targets, but we don't know all of them. North Korea has dug underground facilities, hundreds of meters underground. So there's just no way we can take out all of their nuclear assets. So, you know, that kind of a hostile act would just invite North Korean retaliation, probably the loss of lives of millions of Koreans, South Koreans and Americans and others. South Korea is such a big populous country, such an open society, and the capital city, Seoul, lies in within range of North Korea's conventional weapons. It is a metropolis with 20 million inhabitants. It's a disaster waiting to happen.
Sherry?
Yeah, and that's exactly the point, is that we have trouble knowing exactly where everything is. The Chinese, for example, are trying to figure out where these hydrogen bombs are being exploded. Their concern is if it's the same mountain that all the previous bombs have been exploded, it might even implode or collapse. But otherwise, it's a mountainous region. It's a mountainous country. There are a lot of hidden tunnels, and it's very difficult for us to precisely target. In the meantime, the retaliation could start within minutes on Seoul, and I don't think it's going to be that easy to evacuate 25 million people in a few hours.
So we just wouldn't be able to get it enough or everything at once. North Korea, even though ultimately we probably win the fight, they get a bunch of bombs off.
The question about winning the fight yes, we might overthrow the North Korean government, but the question is going to be and cause war. Think about the millions of people that are living in Northeast Asia, the very prosperous economies there. There are 1.3 billion people in China. We have 25 million people living very close to this border. We also have Japan, which is not far away. You can't attack North Korea and keep it isolated. You can't do a targeted strike here. South Korea has announced that they're going to develop missile capability that could attack some of these nuclear sites. I think it's mostly bluster. It's letting the North Koreans know that they know something or they could do something. But I don't think anyone can realistically take on this kind of activity.
And to the point earlier, Yoon, one of the previous conversations we've had on this show, one of the guests reminded me that Seoul, the capital of South Korea with the 20 million people, is closer to the North Korean border, to the demilitarized zone, than Washington, D.C. is to Baltimore. It's that close. And I don't know if I – you're giving me a weird look.
Yeah,
sure.
I don't know.
I may not be exactly right, but that it's so close.
It's quite close.
And I guess to your point earlier, Yoon, is that you don't necessarily need a nuclear bomb. You just need a few missiles to fall on Seoul as retaliation, and you'll have made your point.
Just conventional artillery with conventional, cannons, North Korea can make a sea of blood, a sea of fire, as North Korea says, off Seoul. So, yes, the geographical reality, the location of Seoul, very close to the border, about 30 miles, makes South Korea a hostage of the North. And North Korea knows this. So when North Korea says we're developing nuclear weapons purely for self-defense, well, there's an element of truth to it, of course. Nuclear weapons are a powerful deterrent, but no weapon is purely defensive. Even the lowly shield has offensive properties. Just ask Captain America or Wonder Woman. North Korea, intends to use its nuclear weapons as a lever with which to bully, extort aid from the U.S. and South Korea, and emasculate and isolate Seoul, and perhaps just one day be able to dominate, liberate South Korea.
Well, in that regard, then, Sherry, why is North Korea any different than any other nuclear power? You want to be a big player on the block, right?
Well, I think for North Korea, it's all they have. Look at their perspective. They're a small, very poor country surrounded by nuclear powers. The United States is in the region. Russia, China are nuclear powers. Japan could ramp up quite quickly, and maybe they'll use this kind of situation as an excuse to do that. Now South Korea is getting the THAAD system, which might protect them more than they are already protected from North Korea. They don't have a lot of options in North Korea. They are quite willing to impoverish their people to build nuclear weapons because nuclear weapons get attention, nuclear weapons get headlines, nuclear weapons give them. But the reality is there's 15,000 nuclear weapons in the world, and most of them are owned by the United States or Russia. One nuclear weapon, five nuclear weapons does not give North Korea the ability to do much. It gives them the ability to get attention and maybe deter regime change. And keep in mind what North Korea has in their image of their future is if they give up nuclear weapons, if they were to back down on this or to show any kind of hesitation, what they perceive their future is Iraq or Libya. And that is keenly in their mind.
You mentioned earlier that Russia, of these six nations, is the most popular in the room right now. Why?
Well, Prime Minister Abe called Putin right away and said, we're going to need your help on sanctions. They're going to be meeting later this week Russia's convening an economic forum in Vladivostok that will bring together people from the region. Abe has made it clear that in addition to the usual issues that they have, bilateral issues, that he wants Russia to toe the line on sanctions or to help them out on sanctions. Putin has made it very clear that there's he doesn't think sanctions work. And in any event, he's being sanctioned himself. Why would he cooperate on sanctions against North Korea?
What do you see, Yoon, in the coming days and weeks? Yes, we're going to see more headlines about missile tests and nuclear tests. It's likely we will see more of those very grabbing headlines. But what kind of smaller incremental headlines will you look for that suggest to you that enough stuff is going on behind the scenes that there is that there's a little bit of a breath being taken? You know what I mean? Like, what are the kind of headlines that don't jar you on page one that you'll look for to signal that there is actually some behind-the-scenes stuff going on and it's actually working?
Right. The big headlines will be created by North Korea, because North Korea will continue to march down this path of provocation and do more missile tests and nuclear tests. But the more significant small headlines might be coming out of the Treasury Department. A couple of months ago, Treasury designated Russians and Chinese and North Koreans, blacklisting them. And that showed a determination, at least on the part of the Treasury Department, to try its best to enforce sanctions. North Korea has been able to move billions of dollars over the past 7 or 8 years with help from Chinese and Russian banks, legitimate banks and companies, and that needs to stop. Russia is being asked to stop importing North Korean labor. You have thousands of North Korean laborers working in the Russian Far East in the logging industry, and that brings the regime a lot of money, probably in the low hundreds of millions of dollars a year. All these are small things, not small, but significant things that we need to address to try to constrict the money flow for the Kim regime. The people of North Korea are perhaps uniquely divorced from the global economy, but the regime actually depends on dollar-denominated international financial transactions. The U.S. dollar is the currency of choice for the North Korean regime, so that makes North Korea quite vulnerable to targeted financial sanctions. The problem is we've not really enforced them.
I think we're also going to find more boarding of ships or stopping of ships that might have any connection with North Korea. We're going to find some more actions trying to limit their access to the internet, to any kind of technology. I think we're going to find targeted sanctions on particular Chinese companies that are identified as being maybe deeply involved in North Korea or having North Korean investment in them. So I think we're going to see that happening.
About a minute left here. Sherry, why are you optimistic? What about is there anything about what just happened in the last few days and the way things are panning out that actually, for whatever reason, actually make you actually optimistic about what's coming?
I think it's hard to be optimistic when a rogue nation is detonating nuclear weapons and sending missiles over Japan. That's hard to find any optimism. What I try to fall back on, I think Professor Lee has mentioned this as well, is the success of the status quo since 1953. We have kept war off the Korean Peninsula, and I think that can continue. I think we have a lot of countries in the region who have deep experience in this area, and that's where I put my optimism right now.
Final thought there, Yoon. What makes you optimistic?
I'm completely in agreement with Professor Gray to present a blasé South Korean perspective. All that South Korea has known since the end of the Korean War is peace, prosperity, growth, freedom. And it's taken for granted that this kind of peace will remain, even with continual North Korean bluster. Nobody wants war, and there are ways to protect the peace, I think, without striking first. Use non-military, non-lethal means of pressure on the Kim regime. I don't think the regime will go berserk and lash out as we strengthen our sanctions enforcement vis-a-vis North Korea.
Professor Lee, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Sherry Gray from the U.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. More online at nprnews.org.